Welcome back to the World Class Podcast. This is your host, Michelle Miller McNair, and I am so excited to have you back with us today. We're going to work on going back over some of the stuff we talked about with other first-time buying or buying it for the first time in a long time, or just want to know what happens when you buy a house. This is what we're going to cover. Last time on part one, we talked through the basics of what loans look like, how loans happen, what are mortgages, what does it look like, and all those things. So if you want to go back and listen to our last episode, you'll hear all about that kind of thing, but I'm going to do a quick recap over it. Just some basic mortgage things. There are different types of mortgages. There are VA, which are veterans loans. There are FHA, typically called first-time homebuyers loans, but doesn't have to be a first-time homebuyer. There are conventional loans, and all of these have different types of standards. A USDA loan is another one. USDA, FHA, and VA loans are government-backed loans. So you're going to have a lot more criteria you have to meet as a borrower. Also, your house that you purchase has to have the criteria met to be approved. Now, it sounds like it can be crazy, and in some situations it can. Typically, VA and USDA will have a little bit more strict stipulations. Can take a little bit longer in the process once you go under contract to get all of the requirements done. Example of that is all of them require an appraisal. Not a lot of people understand this, that every time you go to buy a home, you are going to be required to have an appraisal done. Depending on your area, this can run you anywhere from like $550 to $800 or more. Just depends on where you are. That is something you pay once your lender sends out a request for it. It is a third-party request, meaning we can't choose the appraiser we want. Obviously, you can't choose the appraiser you want because you don't want to be able to get the appraiser to do what you want them to do. Some loans will not back the offer price if the appraisal doesn't meet that. That's additional addendum on it. And so perfect example is FHA. If you want an FHA loan and your house is an offer price, you're offering $250,000 on this house. This is a very cheap house, obviously. But the appraisal comes in at $240,000. That means your loan will not be given to you by the mortgage company for more than $240,000. So when that happens, you have to talk to the seller. Is the seller going to come down and meet the price that you can afford? Or are you going to have to come up and make the difference up and pay them the extra $10,000 that you offered when you went under contract? Just to reiterate that, if it's a little confusing, if you offer $250,000 on a house, but the appraisal is only $240,000, you're only going to be able to borrow $240,000. So that $10,000, that seller's expecting to get that $10,000 because that's what you offered them on that house under contract. So you guys have to work together, or not really work together, but figure out who's going to pay the difference, or is that seller going to come down? Now, seller, once that house is appraised for $240,000, that appraisal stays with it for a few months. So they can't just put it back on the market and be like, we want this much money. That appraisal will stay with it for a few months. Now, they could bring it off the market, let it sit for a few months, and see what happens. That's how it goes. Now, sorry, I had to take a drink of my water. Now, here's the other side of all that. That is for FHA, VA, USDA. Those are a requirement that you kind of have to meet the appraisal numbers. Now, if you're conventional could be private mortgage companies. You're going to put 20% or 5 to 20% down. You're going to put down more money so they don't feel as restricted on your home. Now, they're going to have things like you can't have the roof falling in. It can't be a liability for them to give you this house. Like, they can't be sued because you let them have a house that could kill you. I had that happen. Conventional loan, I was the listing agent. The estate, couple kids owned a house, not kids, but they're, you know, adults where their mom had the home. The estate had not been taken care of in a few years. So one of the rooms had a leak in the roof. Leak in the roof caused a leak in the ceiling, which caused a hole in the ceiling. We got the leak in the roof fixed, but the appraiser said that that hole was actually a safety hazard. The appraiser can put whatever they want to on there. I mean, that's the reality of it. They can decide they think the house is worth this. And they, I mean, they have to put stipulations of why they feel that way, but they really do have the freedom to say whatever they want. You can have three appraisers appraise the same house and get three different options. That's just how it works. And you can appeal once you get that appraisal, but not likely to get a change. So with this home, the appraiser said it wasn't safe. So we had to have that hole fixed before the house could close and the money could be, you know, funded for the loan. And that was fine. We were able to do that. And then even strict stipulations come with that. Like if you have a person come in to do a repair, you have to have proof of the repair, like a receipt or invoice or something like that. And, you know, you can't just have Uncle Bob come over and do it. Uncle Bob has to have a company. Now, he doesn't have to always be licensed and insured, but he does have to have a company. So you have to have some type of proof that not just Uncle Bob wrote it on a napkin that he fixed your roof. So weird stuff like that comes up when you're buying a home. And people say that, oh, if you're doing conventional, you don't have to worry about it. But sometimes it does come up. There is no clear cut black and white with home buying. I wish there was like, if you do A, B, you'll always get C. Not the case. I've had situations where folks have had no problem getting pre-qualified for a loan, and then it got to the closing table and it was something strange, like the borrower or the client, the buyer, works for themselves. They're self-employed. Not a big deal. Self-employed's great. They've been self-employed for 10 years. The problem is that they were missing a paper from last year's self-employment information. And that one paper was making it look like they didn't have consecutive income. It sounds weird, but that's what the underwriter wanted. Underwriters are the folks who write your loan. So your loan officer, whether you work with a bank or a third party, you have a loan officer who's like your advocate. They're the person working to get you your loan. They're doing all the paperwork. They're doing all the numbers. They're getting you all the details. But they're going to submit your information to an underwriter. Underwriters are the mortgage writers. They're the ones who are making it happen. You don't get to talk to these people. They live in a dark cave and never come out for food or light. I'm kidding, obviously, but that's how I see some of them, because they come out and they want all the details. They don't want just who your ex-baby mama was who gave you $100 last month. They want record of how you got that money. I had a story one time of a client who kept putting $500 in her account every week, cash. Well, underwriter wants record of why you're getting $500 a week. Where is it coming from? Now, whether or not you need that money for your loan does not matter. They still want to know a record of where that money's coming from. Well, ask the client, where's the $500 coming from every month? Because they need to know. She's like, well, it's my job. Okay, what's your job? Do you have some type of information about the job? Well, come to find out, she's a stripper. Those are her tips every week when she goes in. And so that one day a week with that $500, we had to have some type of record of it. Her and the underwriter, well, not the underwriter directly, because you never talk to the trolls directly. Kidding again, if you're an underwriter, we love you. You're amazing. Keep doing what you're doing. Just work with us a little bit more. But the mortgage lender officer had to figure out how to get this in writing to make it work for the underwriter. And it worked. It did. She was able to get it all worked out. But things like that pop up. And like people are like, oh, my Aunt Sue's going to give me $10,000 for the down payment. Awesome. But Aunt Sue has to have a specific letter giving you that money. You have to have a specific letter receiving that money. You have to have it all line up with the dates that it hits your account. It's stuff like that that people don't realize happens. You can't just magically get the money and figure out where it comes from. Had one client, mom was giving him down payment. Mom had to write a letter, but then underwriter wanted to know where mom got the money. You never know what these folks are going to ask. Like, they could ask for anything. And when you're at that point, you're about to close on a house, you've went through all the inspections, you kind of want to make the trolls happy. Again, we love you. You're not a troll most of the time. Other than that, these are all that happens with every loan type, whether you are 3% down with a FHA, 5% down with a conventional, 0% down with a USDA or VA. You got to jump through the hoops. That's just how it works. A lot of people think it's like buying a car, but you go in, you pick out what you want, and then the person helps you find the loan. that's not really how it works with home buying. Home buying is you get your loan first, then you find the house that meets your needs. A great example is sometimes your loan with your stipulations, with your credit score, with what you have down, a mobile home may not be a good option. But for some people who have different stipulations, a mobile home is a perfect option. That gives them the ability to buy a bigger house with less money. So you just have to go with whatever works best for you. And you have to find an agent who's willing to do the work to help you get there. Your agent needs to know what your stipulations are. You don't have to tell your agent, oh, I only make this much money. Oh, I'm only approved this much. Oh, yeah, approval you have to know. We have to know what your budget is. But you don't have to tell us what you make every month. You don't have to tell us what your credit score is. Now, we might ask if you've shopped around. Have you talked to different people? Because different lenders have different options with them. There are some lenders who have resources like first-time home buyers assistance program that they can get for you, but others can't. It depends on what programs they can work with and what others can. So you've got to find one that works for you. I always recommend you talk to three different lenders. See which one works for you. If you want to go with something online like Rocket Mortgage, awesome. Talk to Rocket Mortgage person. But then talk to a recommendation from a local Movement Mortgage, different places like that. Find a lender who's going to work for you and you're going to feel good talking to about very personal details. If you talk to three different people and one of them feels pushy, don't go with pushy. If one of them feels like a salesperson, don't go with salesperson. Remember, this person's going to walk you through some of the hardest purchases you're ever going to make in your life and the most detailed personal information you're going to go through in your life. So, choose the right lender. Also, choose the right realtor. Now, once you've found your house, you've got the loan options you got, you start looking for your house options, you find the house you want, and then you're like, okay, we want this. You have to go under contract. Under contract is a period of time that allows you to have an offer on the house. The sellers take it off the market for you to do all your inspections, secure all your financing, and give you the opportunity to make sure this house is the right investment for you. Every house has issues. I have seen $750,000 houses, $100,000 houses, $1 million houses have inspection sheets that are 80 pages long. When you get an inspection on a house, which we recommend everybody get an inspection on a house, because as good as you are and how great your dad the plumber is, nobody's going to be able to see everything wrong with the house like a home inspector will. Get a home inspector who's detailed. And remember, you're paying them to be detailed. So when your pages of inspection report comes back with 95 pages, be thankful inspector found 95 pages. You need someone to be that detailed. You want to know where that crack is in the crawl space and what it looks like when he was there. It's a big deal. Have to get another sip of water. So what that looks like is a home inspector is going to come in and they don't know how to fix anything. Home inspector is going to look at your pipes and go, these pipes are outdated. And initially you're going to be like, whoa, what does that mean? How much is it going to cost? Home inspector is going to go, I don't know. You got to ask a licensed plumber. Home inspectors are not licensed contractors as far as foundation, plumbing, electrical. They're just going to find the problems that they see and recommend you have a professional in that area look at it. We're in North Carolina. Crawl spaces are a thing, and every crawl space has issues. I have never seen or heard of a crawl space that was like peachy keen, jelly bean, yay, go for it. Every single one has issues. It gets hot here. It gets cold here. So that crawl space gets hot, cold, saturated, runoff goes into it. It's a whole thing. Now, sometimes they're horrible. There's foundation cracks. There are settling of water and sediments that are causing foundational issues. And sometimes there's just a lot of moisture in there and it needs a vapor barrier. It can be anything. Now, the report looks scary when you get that home inspection, but chances are you can find a way to get it fixed. Any house you love has the opportunity to be fixed. You just got to figure out, is this house I love worth the fixes? So if you get a rap sheet that comes with this house and the inspection and it's like 95 pages long and you're like, I don't care that the toilets need new rings. I don't care that the faucets have leaks. I don't care that the pipes need to be updated. This house is still perfect for us. We still want it. It's still an investment. You move forward. You go with it. And keep going. Or you get it back and you realize it needs a new roof. It needs a new HVAC unit. It needs new plumbing. And you're like, wait, that's like $80,000 worth of stuff that I don't want to fix on a house that I don't absolutely love. And if that's the case, then you cancel your contract. As long as you cancel your contract in the due diligence period. Let me explain due diligence. When you put an offer on a house, you're going to do a due diligence fee and you're going to do an earnest money deposit. Usually. Now, don't come for me and be like, we don't have to do that. Da, 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 da. Where we are in our area of North Carolina, we still are seeing bidding wars. We're still seeing negotiating offers. We're not seeing people putting no money down anymore. We're just not, unless the house has been on the market for a very long time, which is very rare here. We're still, we don't have a surplus of inventory. So anyway, when you put an earnest money deposit down, this is your deposit to say, I want this house. And you talk with your agent about what numbers look good here. Earnest money deposit goes directly to be held until your contract has been executed. All this money goes toward the purchase of the house. This is just your what you're putting down, your deposits. Now your due diligence fee is where you're paying for a due diligence time. During this time, you have the opportunity to do all your inspections of the house. You can have any inspection you want done, home inspection, well inspected, septic inspection, pest control inspection, pool inspection. You can have it all done. And then during that time, you have the opportunity to cancel that contract. If you cancel that contract, you get back your earnest money deposit. The due diligence fee you pay to the sellers. Now, a lot of people don't like this. They're like, this is not fair. I'm losing money. And I understand that. I completely do. I don't know of anywhere else you hold a deposit for the potential to buy something. Wait, there's a lot. You pay a deposit when you rent a room at a hotel. You pay a deposit when you rent a house for VRBO or all those things. And you don't get those back. You don't get the deposits back if you don't show up. That's because that person is holding that property for you. Now, still might be aggravated about it. It's not fair. If you are paying a $200, now please don't come at me and say you're supposed to always do this amount. Amounts vary based on the house. If you're paying $250 to have a month to check on this house, I would rather pay $250 to check on a house than to buy a $250,000 house without having the chance to do all those things. I'd rather be out $250 than stuck with the house I can't afford with all the issues. So we can talk more in details about due diligence or earnest money or any of those things, but say everything went great. Inspections are fine. You feel good about it. The appraisal came back great. You are going to get your closing disclosures. Closing disclosures come to you from your mortgage lender. They're going to tell you what your payments are, what you need to bring to closing, how much money to bring to closing, all that stuff. Your realtor doesn't get that communication, but you can talk to them about it if you want to. I have had that happen many times where the client's like, I don't understand this. Can you help me out? And so I do, but we're not lenders. We're not your money people, but we are here to help you any way we can. So you get to the closing table. You're so excited. You got the closing presents. You meet the seller, you handshake, high five, you sign all your paperwork. Well, in North Carolina, when you sign that paperwork, you still have to wait. All the money has to be sent to the seller. The loan has to be processed, meaning your bank needs to send, who's giving you a loan, has to send it to the seller. We try to have that done wired and stuff days before. Rarely it does happen that it takes time. So once you sign, it still has to be recorded, meaning the attorney's office has to read over everything, make sure it's correct, and then take it to the county to record the new deed. Once that's done, you get your keys. So you don't get your keys right there at closing table. You get it whenever everything else is processed. So That's way in depth and probably more than you ever wanted to hear or needed, but wanted to let you know what it's like to buy a house, the process, and all the fun things about it. Hope that helps. Hope you understand a little bit more. And next time we'll go into a little bit more deeper about something else. I don't know. Be honest with you. Figured it out. We wanted to cover some first-time home buying or buying a house right now. You know what? If you got something you want us to talk about, send us a email to oneworldclasspodcast@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear more about what you want to hear about. Thank you, guys, and make sure to stay tuned and to like, subscribe, and all the things you're supposed to do with podcasts. Have a great day, guys.